From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, December 4th, 2012. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Are there any innovations in maps or mapping applications in the near future that are going to substantially change consumers' lives? Maybe. We'll look at two of them after a word from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine, already the global leader in geospatial technology news, has launched Directions Magazine India, featuring a weekly newsletter and topical webinars specifically about the growth of GIS in India. Point your browser to directionsmag.in today. And Directions will bring its Location Intelligence Conference to Brazil. On June 19th, 2013, LI Brazil will be co-located with the Mundo Geo Connect Conference in Sao Paulo. More information can be found at locationintelligence.net. Thanks, and be sure to tell a friend about Directions.
Now, Business Insider is very impressed with Seattle's new public transportation maps, and the headline says it all. Every city with a public transit network should copy Seattle's new map. Well, the new maps are talking about are what are called frequent maps or frequency maps. And what they do is they distinguish different lines of public transit based on when they're in service, how quickly they move, and how far they go. And this whole idea seems to go back to a public transit planning consultant named Jarrett Walker. And back in 2010, he put it this way. A transit map that makes all lines look equally important is like a road map that does not show the difference between a freeway and a gravel road. And that's probably pretty accurate. And Seattle is the latest of a number of cities to make a move to create and distribute these frequency maps. And let me describe the Seattle version. And I'm quoting here from Business Insider. The wide blue line is light rail, and the red lines are the new rapid bus product. The rest of the bus network is clearly presented in ways that advertise its frequency and span, so that the frequent network jumps out at you, and services that run only at rush hour recede from attention so that you can clearly see the network that runs all day. They do this by using black for frequent network, then solid blue for the other all-day service, then paler blue with blue outlined white number bullets for the peak-only services. Now, that sounds complicated when you say it in words, but when you look at it, you can see the distinctions. Now, other cities have also already done this. Vancouver and Washington, D.C., I found the official maps. Toronto is also supposed to be on that list, although I couldn't find the maps. And it turns out that some folks in Cincinnati launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund the production of this kinds of maps, and those are available. So the real question, then, is, do these maps help? Do they change behavior? Are they better for the people trying to take public transportation?
Well, I think we got to hail the fact that transit mappers have finally figured out how to use a thematic map. Symbolization like this is not new to mappers. We know how to symbolize based on frequency. We do this all the time with dot map, you know, with dot mapping and color coded mapping. I'm surprised it's taking transit mappers this long to figure out that thematicizing maps according to frequency is something that's of value.
Well, and it's a really interesting point you make, because you would think that if transportation planners and people who make the maps listen to the people who either take public transportation or who want to take public transportation, it all boils down to two basic questions. Does the network go where I need to go? And two, does it run when I need it to run? And then after that, you get to cost, and is it a bus or a train, and some of those other, in a sense, secondary details. So I think for many people, it's less important whether or not it's a bus or a train, but that it runs regularly.
I wonder if this is also a reaction to mobile mapping, in that people are now more comfortable using location-based services, and there is a need to display information quicker in a confined form factor, and thematicizing routes are a way to get people's attention that this is the route that they want. And in particular, for people who are not familiar with the transit system, who are tourists coming to town, and I am a particular example. I don't live in a town that has a particularly good transit network, nor perhaps need one. We're not in a dense urban center. But when I visit D.C. or New York City, I want, and I already have, downloaded apps to my phone that shows me the transit network. So I think it may be a response to something like that, where you have people not familiar with the lines.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because if you are a regular user of public transit, you know those fat lines. You know the ones that run all day, every 10 minutes. So
right.
Unlike you, I do live in a city with lots of public transportation. I don't have to even think about if I want to go stand outside my house and pick up the 88 bus, it comes every 10 minutes. If I'm over in Cambridge, I can stand on Mass Ave and wait for the 77 bus and know it comes every 10 minutes. But it's those of us who aren't from these areas that really need this. What I think these maps do too is they create hopefully a new mental map that, in a sense, makes those lines that run very frequently, the scaffolding, the structure, the key elements of the map, be they north, south, east, west, and then all the other things sort of hang on top of those. And that hopefully is going to change the map that we carry around in our head. Now, having said that, you make a really good point, and that's that while these are terrific static visualizations, more and more people are moving to interactive tools to work with public transit. And again, I live in a city with lots of it, and my very favorite tool in the world is on our MBTA site, and it's called Service Nearby. And you put in an address, and it shows you all of the lines that get near that point. So you can use that sort of as your starting point to figure out for yourself which is the best way to get there, and at what time you want to arrive there. It's really quite elaborate. It's all built on Google Maps, interestingly. It's going to be interesting to see as we move from sort of that static map that we either carry on our phone or in our pocket to something much more interactive that we use on a case-by-case basis as we travel around.
Yeah, and I want to pick up on the fact that mental map that you mentioned, because even for folks who live inside a dense urban area who may want to get to an area that is not necessarily on their planned route of their daily goings, they'll want to have that picture of where it's most convenient to get to. I'm not familiar with this line. They're looking to see where the map goes. I think that mental map is really good. And again, if you're familiar with lines, you can pretty much pick up a different route structure based on what this new map is telling you. I think that mental map image is really sticks out for me.
Well, let's move from the outdoor arena of traveling around in our cities to the indoor arena. And USA Today had an article that sort of rounded up a bunch of indoor location-based services, apps, and new technologies. And it highlighted one that launched in November at the Fernbank Museum of Natural History in Atlanta. And let me quote, this is a little bit long, but it gives you a real sense of what this is, how it works, and how the museum is expecting it to be used. If visitors opt in for the service, the app provides turn-by-turn directions to exhibits and delivers place-specific information about the objects near them. Sounds of crickets and stomping noises from the app greet visitors who walk by the large Tyrannosaurus Rex statue in the museum lobby. Puzzles, videos, and IMAX trailers pop up throughout exhibits. Using visitor traffic pattern data, the museum will determine the popular exhibits and where more internal advertising should go, says Jennifer Grant Warner, museum's chief programming officer. A lot of content and cool stuff are left on the cutting room floor, she says. Taking it to mobile devices gives a way to layer that information. I hope it convinces people to stay longer in the museum. The museum also plans to add revenue-driving features in the future, including an alert for a free drink coupon when the cafe has fewer than 10 customers. Okay, so I'm trying to imagine myself going to a museum with all this stuff going on this app that I have the opportunity to participate with or not. Now, would you get the app and use it?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time holding back my laughter from the explanation after reading that. It almost sounds like museums are going commercial. And not necessarily thinking that's a bad thing. When I read the article, my visions were that the cute little tourist trinket store that they have in museums for books and other things are now moving out into the floor of the museum, and you'll now have kiosks of T-shirts and books right at the Tyrannosaurus Rex. So so what was your question? Would I use this app?
Yes.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? I guess I think I would use it. Having been to many of the major museums around the country, I find that it would be a great help to know where the main exhibits are that I want, and particularly those that may be traveling exhibits.
You can't follow the big sign that says.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny part about
Ice Age
it is
exhibit this way.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't know the habits of other people, but maybe in our minds we think that mobile app has got all the information we need, and I'm not going to look up at that sign. Oh, it's that change of mindset again that people are so familiar with going to their phone first nowadays, that the typical ways of navigating museum are falling by the wayside.
Okay, now hang on. So the first thing that the article suggested is that this is for turn by turn directions. Getting to that exhibit that you're interested in.
That's right, yeah.
And you just talked about how you go to your phone first because you don't want to look at that sign. Well, here's my biggest fear. Once you get to the exhibit, you're still going to look at your phone because you're going to want to use those, let's see, what did they say, puzzles, videos, and IMAX trailers are going to pop up on your phone. That sounds almost more engaging, exciting perhaps, than whatever the exhibit is.
That's a good point. I hope it isn't that way. The whole point is going to see that exhibit. I think what it's replacing are those things that you rent inside of museums where you put the headphones on, it tells you a story. So this is, I think, the next generation of what that is. And I think that's good. I often go to museums and you stop and you look at the museum and you want more information. If this is the way to provide you with that background information, that's a good thing.
And I don't disagree, but I didn't read anything about narration to explain stuff, right?
Yeah.
Puzzles, videos, and IMAX trailers.
Yeah.
Those are things, to me, that engage you with your phone.
Yeah, now, it sounds like they still want to rent you that navigation package.
Well, which may be delivered through your phone, right?
Yeah.
But that's very – I guess what I fear is these things are very different from what I think you're thinking of, and I have used these as well, where you're standing in front of the famous painting, and I'm somebody who knows absolutely nothing about art, and somebody important is helping me understand why this painting is special and what I should look at. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Well, just go back a few ticks here, and what I think you were referring to is that if they're using this information as a way to see what is the well-traveled exhibit, then I could very easily see them turning that information into a way that they would have things for sale, like the navigational aids, you know, a 99-cent app so that you could go through the museum and understand all of the different points that you need in terms of backgrounder. So I think that the museum is doing a smart thing. I'm not sure that maybe this is the right way to present that information, but I think they're doing a smart thing by trying to capture that information of well-traveled exhibits.
But to be fair, they could capture that in many other ways, and I have to believe that people have been at least even doing it by sort of anecdotal information, by having the docents keep an eye on, which painting is having the most people stand in front of it today.
Right, and I think intuitively probably museum curators know that, but it's that secondary set of exhibits that they may not have the most information about. And museum curators are always moving around exhibits. So, it's a case of indoor navigation at its finest, or at least its most micro.
True. Well, and it's also that issue of if we put this exhibit here versus over there, does it get more traffic?
Right.
In
right.
some cases, you can do that. In others, I mean, the Tyrannosaurus Rex at our science museum here in Boston isn't going anywhere.
Yeah,
it's been the same place. It's not going anywhere. It's been.
Yeah.
The other thing that I thought was really interesting about this little paragraph that I read is that the last bit about revenue-driving features, including an alert for a free drink coupon when the cafe has fewer than 10 customers. Not when you're near the cafe, but when the density in that area is low.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting way of not just, I guess if you go for a free drink, then your friend has to buy a drink, or maybe you also buy a muffin with it. I'm not sure how that necessarily generates revenue, although it may. But this is as much about, I think, distributing the people throughout the museum. And it's very much like what they do at Disney, where they can say, oh, the line is really short at this ride. Why don't you go to this ride now, and then you'll do that other ride later?
Yeah, well, why stop at drinks? Why not say that that very popular exhibit is down to 20 persons in line, so better hurry up and go over there. It could be throughout the museum, not
absolutely.
Just the drink
and,
line.
And that, to me, is that would be appealing to me, to sort of help me experience all the things I want to experience without having any, quote, dead time, you know, while I'm there. That part is very interesting. So clearly, this app has many different things, everything from navigation to giving you more information to potentially selling you more trinkets to saving you time so that you're at the places where there aren't so many people. This is a huge undertaking.
And it's a huge opportunity. And this is one of those holy grails of indoor navigation that people have been nipping about the edges for some time. This particular example in a museum, I think, is a very good one. Probably an underserved community in the museum market that now taking advantage of some of the technology that we know is coming.
In the elements of full disclosure, we are of the gray-haired crowd, and our experience in museums in our past has been, you know, the extent of technology was that thing that you rent and carry around with you. But the next generation, if something like this is going to get them to come visit the museum because they have this electronic native guide that's going to give them more than just the exhibits, and that's going to mean more feet through the door, sure, if you're a museum curator, you absolutely want that.
Well, and can't you see hordes of school kids coming through the door with their smartphones and earbuds in and going through the museum? Wouldn't that be a wonderful way to learn about a museum as opposed to just wandering?
I'm honestly not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of wandering, so I would want to have that option too. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
From us here at Directions, we'd like to remind you we've got many webinars coming up this month in December. We invite you to go to directionsmag.com/webinars, and we also want to remind you that we have an open call for paper for Location Intelligence 2013. Go to locationintelligence.net.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can email us at editors@directionsmag. You can send us a tweet @directionsmag, or you can leave a comment where this podcast is hosted @directionsmagazine. Thanks for joining us. And be sure to tell a friend.